I'm Bill Littlefield.
Right center field. And the Giants win it. Behind the pitching of Madison Bumgarner in the ninth inning.
The MLB postseason began this week, and surprise, surprise, pitcher Madison Bumgarner has already thrown a shutout for the Giants, and that's where we'll begin this week's three stories you should know. My guests are Eric Malinowski of Bleacher Report and Claire McNear of The Ringer. Welcome back.
Thanks, Bill.
Thank you.
Eric, I'm going to give you the opportunity to tell us everything you know about Madison Bumgarner. I'm just kidding. We don't have that much time, but go ahead.
It could take all three segments to get through it all. Yeah, you know, Mets fans, myself included in that bunch, probably felt pretty good going into the National League wildcard game, having their ace Noah Syndergaard on the mound. And, you know, Syndergaard pitched pretty well, but unfortunately for the Mets, Madison Bumgarner was, in fact, Madison Bumgarner, and his four-hit shutout propelled the Giants ahead and just really cemented his status, I think, as the best playoff pitcher of this generation. I don't even think there's really much of an argument about it. I mean, everyone remembers his 2014 World Series. He pitched the shutout in Game 5 and followed that up with an insane relief performance in Game 7 in Kansas City, but he just turned 27 this season. He's got three World Series rings. I wonder if we are, in fact, appreciating him enough in the moment, because it seems once the calendar does flip to October, he really just kicks it up to a whole nother gear.
Yeah, absolutely. And I should disclose that I am an unrepentant Giants homer. So one of the things I love about Madison Bumgarner is that he seems like he's from another era almost. Like, he doesn't really have a social media presence. He seems to kind of shrug off the goofy team promos. You know, he doesn't do the silly Full House sing-along or walk around in a giraffe costume. When he appears outside of, you know, off the mound, it's to sell us a truck or to chop down a tree in a Carhartt commercial. He just seems like one of those pitchers from, you know, 100 years ago, and you see, like, the grainy black and white photo.
I'm a Giants homer from back when the Giants' home was in New York. Madison Bumgarner has a ways to go before he catches Christy Mathewson, who also pitched for some very good Giants teams, started 11 World Series games, in which his ERA was 0.97. You can't really expect poor
That's not bad.
Bumgarner get better than that. But he's better than just the best of this generation. I mean, he's up there when you talk about best postseason pitchers.
Yeah, I mean, just going back to the 2014 World Series, I remember that Game 5 shutout. I was there covering that game, and I'm not sure that I've ever been at a sporting event that felt like such a fait accompli. You knew, I feel like the Royals to a man knew that, like, this just isn't going to happen tonight. And it was pretty clear by the second or third inning that Bumgarner was on. And it was such a pressure-packed situation. I don't think that I'm ever going to see another pitching performance as good as that. But if I did, it probably will come from Madison Bumgarner in the playoffs.
All right. I want to talk a little bit about sports on TV. The networks that broadcast pro football are claiming there's no panic in the boardroom, but maybe there should be. Viewership is down 10% or more for Sunday games, Monday night games, Thursday night games. Most of the execs blame the run-up to the presidential election. Everybody's watching cable news, presumably to reinforce the opinions that they already had. But at the same time, viewership of college football is actually going up. Why hasn't preoccupation with Clinton v. Trump distracted people from Notre Dame, USC, Florida, and Ohio State? Maybe in some areas of the country, the passion for college football is such that people can't be distracted from it. And the NFL has got bad officiating, dull matchups, Tom Brady out for the first four games, Peyton Manning retired, outrage at radicals like Colin Kaepernick, of course. Maybe the NFL is suffering. I don't know. In any case, the broadcast execs, as I say, all say they aren't worried. So probably they are. Claire, should they be?
You know, I think it's become very fashionable lately to say that, you know, with all the revelations about head trauma and CTE, that football is going to go the way of boxing. And that might be happening. You know, we might kind of be trending that way. But this does not feel like that to me. This feels like a kind of blip. We'll see. We'll see if it carries on after the election is through. But I can only speak for myself, but I feel like I've spent a lot of time being yelled at by my television this year. And, you know, it might just be that people can only stomach that for so long.
Now, wait a minute. yelled at by your television because you've been watching a lot of football games, or yelled at because you've been going the other way and watching the debates?
I think, well, they had one of the debates. They had the first presidential debate directly conflicted with, I think it was Saints-Falcons, mm-hmm. Monday Night Football, mm-hmm. and it had historically low viewership. And I think the NFL perhaps slotted that game in there sort of knowing that they might sort of lose that battle.
As in nobody would have watched the Saints-Falcons anyway?
Well...
I think there's sort of a loyalty factor that is built in more into the fabric of college football than the NFL. The dirty little secret about the NFL is that, you know, the best way to watch the NFL is on television. The ratings, that's their bread and butter. That's where their biggest growth opportunity is going forward. It's going to be from TV and increasingly from online streaming. So, you know, this could be a blip. I think it's kind of a little bit of a convenient sort of bit of scapegoating to kind of blame this on the election. If I were them, I would probably take it pretty seriously because, you know, the NFL has this stated, you know, goal of, I don't know, it's like $27 billion in revenue or something, and they've got like 10 more years to get there. And the way that they're going to get there is through TV contracts. So they can't afford not to take this seriously.
I'm just waiting for Roger Goodell to start calling various college football officials and try to find out what they're doing right. We have saved our most controversial topic for last, Claire, and I'm trying to get a serious tone into my voice so that you can go ahead and tell us what it is.
Yeah, people need to stop proposing to their significant others at sporting events. It has to end. I mean, it seems like, as a country, we've decided that the acceptable places to propose are over a candlelit dinner, on a balcony with a sweeping view of the skyline, and at a sporting event. And it's an epidemic. Georgetown is now offering a proposal package for people who want to propose to their sweetheart at a basketball game this season. This is true. And they're offering the help of an in-house engagement expert and giving out commemorative T-shirts, and they have a money-back guarantee in case the answer is not yes.
Oh, that's fantastic. I love that part of it.
Can never be too careful.
It should be double your money back. And the guy's going to feel really awful if all those people here know.
But there's just something so weird about involving all these other people, these strangers who've never met you or your significant other, in what should be a really intimate moment. And, you know, I'm all for big displays of love, but this has gone too far.
Quick story. It was just a few days ago, the Warriors had their first home preseason game. So they do one of these things in between the commercial breaks where they bring out two seemingly random people and they dribble around some cones and then they make a pass and then they have to make the layup and that person wins, you know, a $50 gift certificate. So there was a man and a woman, and the woman is killing the guy. She's way up in front and she misses her layup. And then the guy comes up and makes his layup and he wins. Everyone's like, oh, wow, that was really competitive, everything. And then the guy gets down on one knee and proposes to the woman. Hmm. And I'm just thinking, man, what a really awkward way to start off your engagement. You know, I mean, you just publicly humiliated her in front of 18,000 people after she missed this layup. And I guess good luck to them.
You can't see me, Eric, but I'm rolling my eyes. There's also like this weird aspect of the spectacle. And I wrote a story on this and afterwards just heard from so many women, because it's usually women who are getting proposed to in this way, who were just furious on behalf of women everywhere that these ladies were being put on the spot like this.
I think it's an indication of a larger trend. For me, the public marriage proposal is one more indication that privacy is dead. And I think that's too bad. And also, what happened to the notion that when you went to a ball game was sufficient entertainment? Now fans apparently need mascot races, Wi-Fi at their seats, and of course marriage proposals, or they feel like they haven't gotten their money's worth.
If we can get rid of this and then kiss cam, I'll know we're making real progress in this game.
My guests for this week's Three Stories You Should Know have been Eric Malinowski of Bleacher Report and Claire McNear of The Ringer. Thank you very much, both of you.
Thanks, Bill.
Thank you so much.